This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Bill Condon, wrote and directed the new film Kinsey, based on the life of Alfred Kinsey, who conducted groundbreaking research into human sexuality. In the 40s, Kinsey was a biology professor who studied the gall wasp and found that no two wasps were the same. He decided to expand his research to humans, specifically to the study of human sexuality, a subject that was considered taboo. His 1948 book, Sexual Behavior in the Human Male, was based on thousands of interviews with people about the most intimate parts of their lives. He followed that up with a book about female sexuality. His work was enormously controversial in its time and remains so among those people who believe he opened the door to sexual amorality. Filmmaker Bill Condon also wrote and directed Gods and Monsters, and he wrote the screenplay for the musical Chicago. Here's a scene from Kinsey after Kinsey has decided to investigate human sexuality and teach a course on marriage. He's in the classroom. Kinsey is played by Liam Neeson.
Why offer a marriage course? Because society has interfered with what should be a normal biological development, causing a scandalous delay of sexual activity, which leads to sexual difficulty in early marriage. In an uninhibited society, a 12-year-old would know most of the biology which I will have to give you in formal lectures. So, let's start with the 6 stages of the coital sequence. Both sexes experience all 6 stages equally. Stimulation. Who can tell me which part of the human body can enlarge 100 times? Miss.
I'm sure I don't know. And you've no right to ask me such a question in a mixed class.
I was referring to the pupil of your eye, young lady. And I think I should tell you, you're in for a terrible disappointment.
I spoke with filmmaker Bill Condon about his movie and Kinsey's research. You might not find our discussion appropriate for children. I asked Condon how Kinsey got people to respond candidly to his questionnaire about their sexual histories, when they would be unlikely to feel comfortable discussing such an intimate subject with friends or spouses.
One of the most original things about the methodology was that he always assumed you had done everything. So it was never, have you ever, you know, masturbated? It was, when was the first time you masturbated? With every question, the burden of kind of admission was taken off of you. It was just assumed you had done it all. So there was an extremely non-judgmental approach. He also had these ways of bringing the questions back to the same place over and over again, and really being able to test whether your answers were consistent. You know, so he worked in a lot of tripwires to weed out the liars and the exaggerators, which of course is one of the real problems with taking sex histories. And you know, in general, having collected these 8 million gall wasps, he was trying to apply the same idea to sex. If I can just get more than anybody else, his aim was to get 100,000. He actually wound up getting about 28,000, but that's still more than anybody had or has since then.
You know, do you think that even though he got thousands and thousands of people to respond to his survey, do you think that they were a representative sample of either Americans or of people in general in their approaches to sex?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I think, first of all, it's nothing more than a snapshot of the country at the time, you know, so that the male volume really represents men during World War II,
mm-hmm.
And the female that and a little later. He'd solved one of the big challenges facing sex researchers, but in doing so created another problem. You know, the challenge was inevitably somebody who's going to talk to you about his or her sex life is probably more sexually comfortable and active than people who won't. So therefore, you know, the data might already be skewed in a certain direction. He came up with this idea with the help, actually, of Ray Kroc's brother, the founder of McDonald's, that they would get 100% groups. They would get people who'd gotten together for a reason that had nothing to do with sex, a bowling league or a lady sewing circle, and get 100% of those people to give their sex histories, actually using tactics that, you know, no one could get away with today. You know, the first 40 or 50% would fall in pretty easily. Then he'd use them to convince, you know, the next 20 or 30%. And the holdouts really were subjected to threats. They were no longer going to be in the bowling league or the sewing circle and late night phone calls until finally everybody agreed to do it. So
talk about peer pressure.
Exactly. So he felt if I just get enough of these groups, then it has to all add up to a kind of representative sample of America. And of course that wasn't true. You know, he oversampled in certain groups. He, you know, too many inmate histories, for example, something that he corrected in the female volume. Everybody always raises this issue of 10% of males being homosexual, you know, and Kinsey actually never said that. Kinsey actually thought, again, for him, homosexual was an adjective describing acts. He thought on the sixth end of his scale, people who were involved in exclusively homosexual acts, that was anywhere from 2 to 4% of the population, which basically falls in line with what people think today. What he did say was that 10% of the population had exclusively homosexual activity for 3 years in their adulthood. Now you have to remember, again, snapshot of a time and a place. This is America during wartime, A, and B, at a time when most schools were single sex. So these are things that wouldn't apply today. But that's an example of something where a strict look at his data comes up with basically the same result as what people come up with today.
One of the questions that you have him asking in the movie, a question I really like that isn't directly related to sex, is this: how young were you when you no longer thought of your parents' home as your own? And there's two things I really like about that question. One is that it doesn't say how old were you. It says how young were you.
Yeah.
And the other is that, like, what a really interesting question to ask. Like, at what point did you realize this is no longer what you're about, or the center of your life? You've moved on to becoming an adult person, a differentiated person.
I know. I love that question too, and it was obviously a real find for when I was writing the script, because it allows you to sort of deal with so much in the context of sexuality. And that's what he would do. He would ease in with these biographical questions, and then slowly start to expand so that you got a question like that isn't directly about sex, but in some basic way is, because obviously that differentiation does happen during adolescence, during the onset of adolescence.
Now you interviewed one of Kinsey's researchers as background for the screenplay. What are some of the things, like, which researcher was it, and what were some of the things you learned either about the researcher or about Kinsey's own life?
It was Paul Gebhardt, the character played by Tim Hutton in the movie. And actually, we had a wonderful screening the other day at the Kinsey Institute at IU for over 1,200 people, and he was there. And I was so relieved to talk with him afterwards and get his seal of approval. You know, the thing that struck me more than anything about him was the absolute sense of openness and the non-judgmental nature of talking to him. Here I was in this sort of awkward position of interviewing the ultimate interviewer and having to ask, you know, pretty jump in and ask some pretty, you know, intimate questions. What was sex night like at the Kinseys, for example, you know? And he was so matter-of-fact about it all, about the affair that he'd had with one of the other researchers' wives when he first arrived in Bloomington, the effect that had on his marriage. It was, again, so open that I really got a glimpse into how these guys pulled it off, you know? There's just something so matter-of-fact about everything that was discussed.
What is sex night at the Kinseys?
Well, you know, they did, it wasn't that frequent, but they did get into Kinsey, you know, did start to promote this idea of open marriages and kind of a life where everyone would sort of enjoy each other and kind of, you know, trying to strip away all the other things that kind of go with that. You know, it was one of the kind of wackier things he tried, you know, and Kinsey's somebody who fell into this study, you know, started talking to people about sex, traveling the country talking to them about it, then started observing it, then started filming it, and then finally sort of, you know, went into this to this further point of kind of trying to actually create this sexual, I wouldn't call it utopia, but a certain sexual environment where everything would be open, you know, kind of a swinger way before his time, you know.
This is one of the things that a lot of people find very troubling about his life, because, you know, he's not exactly like the dispassionate scientist just observing behavior under the microscope. He's trying out a lot of things himself, a lot of things that were perceived as definitely violating, you know, the moral code of the time.
That's correct. And I think that's the trouble I think people get into. You know, they very quickly then say that the work was agenda driven, for example. And there's I really have found no proof for that idea. His first passion was science. You know, the idea of having collected these gall wasps and that he could collect as many human beings was for him more important than anything. Work was more important than anything. You know, but I think, you know, it's a problem that people who work in this area really face, because everyone sort of applies their own kind of code to other people's behavior. So, especially when they hear that he was actually having all this extracurricular activity, there's immediately people leap to the conclusion that that's what the whole point of it was, and there's really that is not the case.
The way you portray him in the movie, he's somebody who is very scientifically interested in sex and becomes very interested in the pursuit of sex himself, but that the way you portray him, he's kind of emotionally tone deaf to the consequences that sex can have. For instance, if you're married and then you have relations with somebody outside of that marriage,
yes,
your spouse is likely to be upset, and he's a little uncomprehending about those kinds of emotional consequences. Is that based on research that you did about him?
Absolutely. You know, uncomprehending, impatient, you know, so driven by this work. And again, these are, I think that anyone who's unsympathetic to him will find plenty in this portrait to kind of confirm that point of view. You know, he is a complicated character, you know, a complicated person. And that was absolutely a part of it. The, you know, again, starting with the idea of studying sex scientifically, which meant for him outlets, namely orgasms, and then, you know, stripping away religion and morality and culture from that, and then extending that idea further and further into his own life, until it became almost a mission with him, is something that is understandably, you know, upsetting for people. I think you have to kind of have a complicated view of the world to really kind of countenance the whole picture, you know.
My guest is Bill Condon. He wrote and directed the new film Kinsey, which stars Liam Neeson and Laura Linney. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest Bill Condon wrote and directed the new film Kinsey. It's based on the life and work of Alfred Kinsey, who conducted pioneering research into human sexuality. Here's an example of a scene that describes a side of Kinsey's life that a lot of people would find disturbing. His wife walks in on him as he's sitting on the edge of the bathtub in his robe, and there's blood dripping from between his legs. And he explains that he's just circumcised himself. Explain what's happened here.
Well, toward the end, Kinsey, who dabbled in a lot of things to try to understand them, did get involved in certain masochistic acts. And again, this is the truth. And I think, you know, it's a movie's job or a dramatist's job to try to understand that. And in the scene that you're describing, he has his own explanation, which is, you know, I just wanted to experience it, you know, it was the explanation that he would give to people. She immediately sees it in a different way. You know, she says, don't stop punishing yourself. This comes at a low point, you know, toward the end of his life, when the female volume's been attacked and his funding's been slashed and he's under, you know, the cloud of a court case. And he feels that the work has kind of been a dead end and been a failure, you know. So she sees it more clearly as an attempt to punish himself. And I think the movie itself has yet another explanation, which is, I believe, you know, and I think this is kind of common. You know, I think it's common in artists, for example. But you look at Kinsey as somebody who self-described as someone who was tormented and damaged by this very repressive childhood and extremely intolerant father, you know. And one of the lessons of that father was about the shame of sex. And so what happens? He liberates himself. He discovers nature and science and all these things that, that make him treat those ideas as mumbo-jumbo, you know. Then he starts to starts in on this mission, which he hopes will save other people. He said this over and over from the torment that he experienced. But what happens to that voice of shame? It doesn't just disappear. You can't, you know, like an artist going deeper and deeper into a subject and then sharing what they discover with the world. It doesn't mean that those wounds are healed necessarily. And it the way I read it, and I think the movie presents it, is that it's the kind of reincarnation of that sense of shame, you know, of the prudery that the father represented, you know, and at a very weak moment, kind of, you know, really, really punishing himself.
Now, you're talking about his repressive father. There's a scene in the movie in which he basically does a sex survey with his own father, and the father explains that as a way to punish him for masturbating and to prevent him from doing it further, this harness was created for him so that he could no longer do this.
Right.
And it becomes clear in the movie that this is why, one of the reasons why he became so repressed and intolerant and was so repressive in the way he brought up his son. But although that story was told to Kinsey, it wasn't told to Kinsey by his father. It was somebody else who he was administering the survey to who told him.
That's correct.
That story.
Who was also, yes, who also had a similar kind of repressive trait. So, yeah, that is me combining two ideas. Kinsey always wishing he'd taken his father's history and never having had a chance to do it, and speculating about something like that about his father, and then this one subject. For me, it's less about Kinsey than a whole position, you know. But the fact that there was no breakthrough with the father, that is dramatic license. There's no question.
There are several religious websites right now that are protesting your movie and are outraged that Kinsey should be discussed in a way other than condemning him. I'll quote a couple of things. The Catholic Outreach website writes, "A committed atheist, Kinsey was determined to undermine the traditional moral climate of America and pave the way for widespread acceptance of all kinds of perversity, including pedophilia and bestiality. On the website of Concerned Women for America, this is written, he believed that all sexual behaviors were natural, including bestiality, pedophilia, homosexuality, sodomy, and sadistic sex. He argued that sex and morality had no connection." Have you been keeping up with the websites?
I have, you know, and I think the only thing that's accurate there in what you quoted was a committed atheist, you know. There are groups that have just demonized him over the years, again, with charges like pedophile, which of course are completely untrue. He was, it's this distinction that people seem unwilling to make between speaking to a pedophile and then using the data and supporting or promoting pedophilia or sex with animals or anything else, you know. Sometimes you just wish they would be more honest about their real concerns, you know, which I think in general, it's everything that's happened over the last 50 years, which they attribute all to Kinsey, which I think is really giving him much too much credit. But, you know, for example, today there's someone called Judith Reisman who's been writing about him for years and really is the source of these pedophilia charges. And just to put them in context, you know, here's a little excerpt from the talk of the town in this morning's New Yorker. "To a reader of Reisman's scholarly papers, it sometimes appears that there is little for which she does not hold Kinsey responsible. In her research on gays, for instance, she's written that the recruitment techniques of homosexuals rival those of the Marine Corps. The Kinsey paradigm, she holds, created the moral framework that makes such recruitment possible. Reisman also endorses a book called The Pink Swastika, which challenges the myths that gays were victimized in Nazi Germany. The Nazi Party and the Holocaust itself, she writes, were largely the creation of the German homosexual movement. Thanks to Alfred Kinsey, she warns, the American homosexual movement is poised to repeat those crimes. Idealistic gay youth groups are being formed and staffed in classrooms nationwide by recruiters too similar to those who formed the original Hitler Youth." This is the kind that's the level that you're dealing with, the level of reality, basically. But again, charges which are accurate, for example, you quoted about atheists. This was true. are thrown in with charges like pedophile, which have no basis in fact. And over the years, things that have become more culturally palatable, like a supporter of Planned Parenthood or of abortion or of homosexual, of tolerance of homosexuals, have sort of fallen by the wayside, and they've landed on this one charge for which, you know, there is no gray area in our culture, nor should there be, in pedophilia. So it's a little frustrating because you're not dealing on a rational level with somebody. You're just dealing with these made-up charges.
Bill Condon wrote and directed the new film Kinsey. He also wrote and directed Gods and Monsters, which won an Academy Award for Best Adapted Screenplay. He wrote the screenplay for the musical Chicago, which won 6 Academy Awards. He'll be back in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, back with Bill Condon. He wrote and directed the new film Kinsey, which stars Liam Neeson as the controversial scientist who researched human sexuality in the 1940s and 50s. Alfred Kinsey was controversial in his time and remains controversial among those people who believe he condoned and encouraged sexual amorality. I spoke with filmmaker Bill Condon about his movie and Kinsey's research. You might not find our discussion appropriate for children. When we left off, we were discussing some of the websites that have condemned Kinsey, the man and the movie. There were people picketing at, certainly at a theater in Philadelphia, although I don't think the pickets lasted very long. But has this been happening around the country, that there were pickets, at least for the early screenings of Kinsey?
Yeah, I was just in St. Louis and did a book signing there at a Borders, and there were a number of people outside. None of whom had seen the movie, by the way. A friend of mine went out and asked, and everyone said, no, of course they hadn't seen it. And I guess, you know, that's always the disappointing thing. And it's an odd position to be in because I think, you know, people think people make movies just want any kind of publicity, any kind of controversy. But it's a little different here because if you look at the movies that, you know, have had this kind of controversy swirling around them in the last year, like The Passion of the Christ or Fahrenheit 9/11, they were about Jesus Christ or about George Bush. These are, you know, these are people have made up their minds about those people. But Kinsey is somebody who's still, you know, who's basically forgotten, you know, much of a celebrity as he was in his day. I think, you know, he's just a footnote for most people now. So it's just frustrating to think that, again, people with pickets and these words on them, very much like communists in the 50s, to my mind. You know, it's just convincing people just to stay away. You know, some of these people, Dr. Laura Schlesinger, went on the O'Reilly Factor a couple of years before he started shooting, you know, asking people, you know, to write in and try to stop this movie from being made. You know, they tried to take an ad in Variety, which to its credit didn't run it. But you know, over the years, Liam Neeson's mother has gotten letters from people sort of, you know, egged on by these websites. So it's just a shame that they just are so afraid of the talk, basically, you know, just are letting people make up their own minds.
So what impact have those efforts to either prevent you from making the film or prevent people from seeing the film and to discredit Kinsey's research? What impact has that had on you personally or on your ability to make, you know, on the ease with which you were able to make the movie?
Yeah. You know, ultimately, it was a tough movie to get financed, and it's very hard to know what all went into that. You know, it's a film that the script I finished in 2000 and it took us 3 years to get the money together. And, you know, I assume part of that did have to do with the controversy surrounding him, you know, but a lot of other things, too. It's just hard to get a, you know, a kind of drama made at a, you know, $10 million budget. It's you know, very, you know, outside of the studio system. In general, now it's been interesting. The most surprising thing for us a week ago was the fact that, you know, public television stations take these interstitial ads, and we placed.
They're not ads. They're underwriting or enhanced underwriting.
Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Good. thank you for that. But you know, all of the stations around the country had accepted an ad for Kinsey. Obviously, this is what we feel our target audience is, and WNET in New York rejected it with an email saying it was not because of anything in the commercial, but it was simply the content of the film and their anxiety about their viewers and calls and all of that stuff. Now once that was kind of talked about in the press, they've backtracked and said, no, it's because we don't take commercials, and which isn't really the case, I think, and also because the commercial itself was too racy. But we do have that original email, and that was the first impulse. And that was a little surprising. It was the same week as Saving Private Ryan. And suddenly it felt as if these culture wars that we've all been talking about are heating up a little, where people on both sides, and certainly in this case on the right, are really starting to feel that they can have an impact on these things. And it's that thing you worry about most, which is self-censorship. It wasn't because people had called and complained about the commercials. It was the fact that they might. And also, obviously, the fear of the FCC that maybe had convinced this station manager to not take the ads.
Do you feel that the campaign to prevent this movie from being made had a chilling effect on you? Did you watch what you said, or do you think you were any more cautious in showing anything sexual, or any more careful in how you presented Kinsey as a result?
Oddly, I think it was the opposite. I think it was I felt I had to include, for example, the scene with the pedophile had been in the movie, but it hadn't been quite so prominent.
Why don't you describe the scene for listeners who haven't seen
it? Well, this Kinsey did interview this man, an omniphile, really. I mean, he had sex with five generations of his family and 200 species of animals and hundreds of underage boys and girls. Kinsey had been in touch with him, and he had sent him books of data, and then finally sat down with him and took a 17-hour sex history. It was the longest one he ever took. And he is the source for these charges. The fact that Kinsey talked to him, did not have him arrested. I should say, I don't know that it's really to the point, but when they finally did meet, that the man was old and died less than a year later, and that activity was in the past. But still, it's sort of not really the point. The point is that Kinsey saw his role as being the father confessor of sex, and that the whole project was based on trust and anonymity. But there are people who now complain about that. I think that's legitimate. I think it's a legitimate, criticism or something to discuss. However, again, this kind of blurring of the distinction between talking to or about something and endorsing it is where I think they get into dangerous waters. It's similar to people not being able to, in sex education classes today, talk about AIDS for fear that somehow they're endorsing the idea of activity that would lead to it,
So you were saying you made this scene with
It had been
this interview
there, yes.
Scene longer than it otherwise would have
right.
been.
Right. Dramatically, it just took on a little more weight. And I think it was because, in a way, knowing that these people are out there, I wanted to be sure to include that argument and show where it came from, and not sort of, again, I hadn't been leaving it out before, but really give it its proper weight in the movie and let you sit there and make up your own mind about how you feel about the fact that he just continues on with this interview. There were discussions he had with people on his staff about using this data. And he was above all, he was interested in facts and data and what he'd collected. And you can make up your own mind about that.
We've talked a little bit about some of the criticisms against Kinsey in our time. What were the criticisms like when he was actually doing his research in the 40s and 50s?
Yeah. Well, there are certain groups that were came out against him. Obviously, the attacks for the statistical methodology. Also, people like Lionel Trilling, Margaret Mead, Margaret Mead, he's taken all the fun out of sex. Lionel Trilling, where's the love? Gore Vidal today was talking about how he repeated that criticism that Trilling had made to him directly to Kinsey. And he said, but I can't measure love, that's not what I'm about. But I think there was certainly, the Times was never a fan. And there's a certain kind of New York intellectual crowd that never really embraced Kinsey, again, thought there was something limited in the whole the whole enterprise.
Of course, you had to face the question of how to make a movie about somebody who is very explicitly researching sex and yet get a rating that allows people to go see the movie. So can you talk a little bit about the standards you set for yourself about what to show and what not to show and why you use those standards?
Sure. You know, the whole issue of the rating was a real challenge. In two ways, I have to say. First of all, I wanted to suggest just how revolutionary Kinsey was. You know, he marched into a classroom in the late 30s in the context of all these hygiene films and put up a slide of intercourse, of an erect penis and a vagina, you know. I wanted to both be able to show that in an R-rated movie and also to suggest just how shocking that was, you know. And the second problem I approached, you know, with a kind of classic studio style of filmmaking, so that you're in this kind of pretty academic setting and you're deep into the movie and it all feels sort of traditional, and then suddenly the slide is there. And I have been pleased to see it with audiences where the gasp that happens among the students is kind of mirrored in the audience, you know, a little bit of nervous wrestling at least. But when we shot it, I was never really sure. I had to shoot a backup of just a clinical drawing because I was never sure we'd get that past the MPAA. And we sent the movie over to them, and they called after a long day of discussion and said, we're giving you an R for pervasive sexual content, and thank you. We learned a lot. So we were all relieved.
Did they explain why they didn't object to that slide?
You know, honestly, they didn't. But I can just assume it's because it's done in a clinical context that, you know, if you describe pornography as you know, the use of imagery or words to arouse, to get a sexual reaction, that clearly was not what that was doing, you know?
My guest is Bill Condon. He wrote and directed the new film Kinsey. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Bill Condon. He wrote and directed the new movie Kinsey, which is a biography of Alfred Kinsey, the scientist who researched human sexuality. These are more biographical questions about you, but I'm wondering, like, did you have sex education when you were in school?
We did, actually. I went to a Jesuit high school, all boys, and I remember Father Duffy teaching us about 69 when I was probably 13. And it was, you know, it was in the late 60s and it was in New York, and we couldn't possibly be, as students, more rebellious than the faculty was at that moment, you know, it was a very progressive school in that way. As I was saying to Gore Vidal today, the first book I think I read about sex was The Prisoner of Sex by Norman Mailer when I was probably 13. And, you know, he had lots of theories. In fact, Gore reminded me that it was over The Prisoner of Sex that the famous battle on the Dick Cavett Show happened with Norm Mailer. But one of them was, of course, my only outlet at the time, which was masturbation, that every orgasm is, you know, that doesn't, you know, isn't implanted without a condom in a woman is another chapter of the great American novel that's just been wasted. I mean, you know, he has very specific ideas about fluids, I think. I can remember, you know, that's, and it's been so interesting to me later on to read about Kinsey, and he talked about, you know, Freud reinventing sin as neurosis, you know. And for me, very early on, the sense of having grown up in a devout Catholic household, you know, there was certainly a sense of sin and shame connected with sex. Then to pick up as the first book to get over that, Norm Mailer, and hear some of this, that left me completely confused.
Having made Kinsey and then being in a position like now of talking about the movie and the issues it raises publicly, have you found that there's an unbridgeable gap between people who think sex is shameful and sinful unless it's marital procreative sex and it's something that really shouldn't be discussed in public? That there's an unbridgeable gap between those people and the people who think that sex is fine to talk about, it's okay to see pictures of it, it's not anything, it's private but not embarrassing. Do you think that those two worlds just are not communicating well and are unlikely to meet in the middle?
You know, I wouldn't have thought so up to now. I mean, I think things do get very kind of, I don't know, thrown into relief by elections, for example. But it does feel as if, I think it's all so complex. And, you know, I remember Pauline Kael used to write about the fact that in movies only liberals have good sex. And we all know that's not true in real life, you know, that even now, you know, these articles about where Desperate Housewives is, you know, most popular, and it's in the red states, just suggest how complicated and everybody is, you know, and everybody is individual. You know, for me, I had a great time showing this movie to a more conservative audience in St. Louis last weekend. I remember my favorite screening of Gods and Monsters was to a highly Mormon audience that were laughing complicitly with you know, Ian McKellen as he's trying to get Brendan Fraser out of his trousers. And you got the sense that some of them would have stoned him, you know, in daylight. But here you are at nighttime, you know, in the dark, in the dream world, you know. And I think sex is deeper than politics, you know. I think it's – there's – so the unfortunate thing for me is that the real gap is the same one that Kinsey was focusing on between what we do and what we say we do. You know, so yes, maybe there is always going to be the gap between people who don't want to talk about it. I don't know truly who are the people who think there's only one way to do it. You know, and I think it'd surprise you. You know, which people feel that and which people don't.
I really like the casting in the movie, and I think Liam Neeson and Laura Linney are terrific. And just on a more trivial note, in terms of the way the film is done, Laura Linney playing Kinsey's wife is you portray the character as somebody who isn't spending a whole lot of time thinking about how she looks. You know, her clothes are kind of haphazard and lacking in style. On the other hand, they're not so screamingly lacking in style that we'd be making fun of her. She just looks like the kind of person who isn't aware of style, doesn't really care about it. And I thought it was just exactly right. I don't know if she was that way in real life or not, but I think for the character you're portraying her as being, that she was just perfectly dressed.
Well, thank you. And that's Bruce Van Leyen did the costumes, and Laura Linney, who was so intent on getting that right. And it is how she was. And it's kind of what we wanted to celebrate, you know. Again, most movies
she wasn't
about
a vixen.
Exactly, yes. Yeah. But that's the point. It's everybody's having sex, you know, and including, you know, in movies, you don't get that sense. It's only the pretty people who are having sex, you know. But in real life, that's not the case. And so it was that, to me, one of my favorite scenes is Laura, Liam shirtless, and Peter shirtless. And before we started shooting, I said, belly's out. You know, everybody had a very ordinary body. And that's what's happening in the world.
Well, Bill Condon, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you so much, Terry.
Bill Condon wrote and directed the new film Kinsey, starring Liam Neeson and Laura Linney. Coming up, we remember newspaper reporter and editor Leroy Ahrens. He founded the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association. This is Fresh Air.